him out. In fact, they'd like to run him off. They'd like even to take him out completely. So resistance and opposition to Jesus intensifies. And as that occurs, he withdraws from the mainstream. But many people continue to follow him, including you. You continue to follow him. And so, on this particular day, you're near the Sea of Galilee, where Jesus came and sat down near the water. People started gathering, as they always did when Jesus sat down to teach. People wanted to be as close to him as possible, and so they maneuvered, and there was some pushback as the number grew more and more. And people were pressing in to be as close to Jesus as they could, and he understood that his presence was causing a stir, even some problems. So he addressed the situation by borrowing a boat, and he pushed it out into the water so he could sit in it to teach. That gave him some breathing room, and it gave everybody on the shore equal access to him and his teaching. And so on that occasion, he is teaching from the boat, and you hear him teach in a way that you have not heard him teach before. He teaches by telling some stories. They're taken from scenes in real life. You immediately identify with that. You listen, and you're familiar with what he's talking about. The first one tells about something you've seen hundreds of times in this Palestinian region. A sower sowing seed. You listen. And as you listen, what effect does it have on you? As you listen, you hear Jesus say, "A sower went out to sow. And as he sowed, some seeds fell along the path, and the birds came and devoured them. Other seeds fell on rocky ground where they did not have much soil, and immediately they sprang up, since they had no depth of soil. But when the sun rose, they were scorched, and since they had no root, they withered away. Other seeds fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked them. Other seeds fell on good soil and produced grain, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. He who has ears, let him hear." A reading from Matthew chapter 13, the first paragraph in that chapter. Now, as you listen to that story, you might wonder a little about the sowing practices. You didn't hear any reference to plowing or in any way preparing the soil. And you heard about a sower who just sort of randomly scattered the seeds on the ground without any real plan. So what do you think about that as you listen to that little story that Jesus told? And other questions come to your mind. Who is this sower? And what is he sowing? What kind of seed is it that he is spreading? And so you understand the story. You identify with it immediately. But you wonder, what is the point and what is the message? As you reflect on that little story, you see the balance of it falls on the soils. If we were naming the parable, we might call it the parable of the soils. In fact, I'll just take a little aside here. I had a friend of mine tell me this little story that he was teaching on this parable. And so he said, we call this parable the parable of the sower, but it really ought to be called the parable of the soils. And he made quite a big point about that. And after he finished, a little lady in the class just barely raised her hand, and she said, "Brother," she said, "Jesus called it the parable of the sower. Matthew 13, verse 18, that's what Jesus called it." So we might call it the parable of the soils. It really is mostly about them, but Jesus called it the parable of the sower. So it is a story that tells about different soils. So how many different kinds were there? Four different kinds. And they were four different kinds that produced different results in the seed. So the sower was just one. And we assume that the seed he sowed, wherever it was the same type of seed. But he sowed the seed on different types of soil, and there were different results. You know, soil is passive. It kind of awaits activity. It can't really generate anything. So you think about this little story, and you'll notice it doesn't have any imperatives. There are no commands. It doesn't say do this, do that. It just simply describes how things are. The sower goes out to sow. He sows the seed. He scatters it on different types of soil. And here's what happens. The story doesn't say change things, cultivate the soil, improve it. It simply says the seed falls on different types of soil. So, what was Jesus doing? He hadn't been teaching this way before, and now he is. Was he explaining what was happening as these people were listening to him teach? Was he trying to give information as to why some follow him and some don't? Some come for a while, and then they return to whatever they were doing. Some seem to be really intrigued by the message, but other matters come up in their lives and they leave. And then some come and listen and learn and stay. And wherever he goes, they go. And whatever he does, they are impressed with. And as all that sinks in, the message may be a little disturbing. As you let that message go over in your mind and heart, what if I happen to find myself as an unproductive soil? There were four kinds of soil and only one of them was good. What if I find myself as one of the unproductive kind? And the story tells of a harvest, but what if I'm not a part of the harvest? What if something is not really good forthcoming from my life? So it causes you to think. It causes you to think. And if I'm understanding what's going on here in Jesus' teaching time and method and approach, then I think that's exactly what he was wanting people to do. He was wanting them to think. I hope that what I've said so far will approximate the impact that this little story had on the people who had gathered to listen to Jesus, who were there on the shore as he was teaching from the boat. And when they leave, well, do they have any answers from the story, would you say? I think there is more analysis than there is answers. Do they come away with a decision? Well, the parable didn't really call for a decision, so maybe contemplation, but not decision. But then, right at the end, he gives them something that they can do. He says, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear." Ah, now that's something I can do. There's an action that I can take, and that it may make a difference. In fact, Jesus, I think, is wanting people to do just that. He's wanting them to hear and think and contemplate and to face the fact that people are responsible, that people are responsible for the way they hear. So, what I want us to do for a little while is take a closer look at the parable and think. I'm sure that's what Jesus wanted people on that occasion to do, and so let's do it this evening. Let's think about this sower. You see him there in the picture. He had some kind of purpose. He didn't just sow entirely indiscriminately. There was a field, and so he went to that place. He did, I would say, sow somewhat carelessly. The story says nothing about preparing the soil, that he wasn't precise in the way he scattered the seed. So he just scatters the seed, and it falls on all types of soil. So the focus of the story Would you agree that the focus of the story is really not on the sower? And it's really not on the seed, but it's on the soil. I would say, you know, all stories have a main character. All good stories have a plot and characters. So who would you say are the characters in this story? Anybody have an idea? I think probably we would have to say personification. I think the soils are the characters in the story. The sower, of course, has some action, but really it all focuses on the soils. They're the main characters in the story. So, what do you think Jesus was trying to get people to think about? I think he was trying to get them to think about what was happening right then and right there in their own hearts and lives. He was sowing the seed. He really is the sower. He was getting the word out. He was speaking the message of God. He was doing it so people could hear and understand. But what effect was it having? You know, he dealt with people at all strata of society, all conditions of heart. And so his message goes out to everybody. But what about the soil? Let's think about the soil. The ark of the sower's hand scatters the seed, and some fell beside the road. So what's been going on beside the road? What do you think? On the roadside. What? The ground is hard. Okay. It's completely uncultivated. Nobody's giving it any attention. Maybe feet of all kinds, animals' feet, humans' feet, have trampled on it and packed it down. So what does the seed do on this soil? Just kind of sits there. And it's on top of the soil. It can't go down in it. And so what happens to it? Does anything happen to it? Birds come and get it. That's right. The birds come and get it. And it becomes just nothing more than food for birds. Then some of the farmer seeds fell on places where there was some soil, but not much. Just below the soil, and maybe sticking up through the soil, as this picture shows. There was a rocky ledge. So in places the soil was really shallow. So what does that allow or help the seed to do? Can it sprout? Yes, it sprouts. And it may be warmer than it is in other places because of the rocks. So it sprouts. Maybe sprouts quickly. But what problem does it encounter? No substance. That's right. There's no nutrients. The seed would sink into the shallow soil, but there was not much there to sustain the roots. And when the sun got hot, the little plants were scorched and they wilted. Nothing to sustain them. So, we have two types there before us. Then some seed fell where there were thorns. A lot of thorns. There was room to flourish, and there was some nutrients to grow, but what was happening? Why didn't the seed flourish? Because there were other things that were also there. So the seed sprouts and the plants grow, but they're choked out by other things. So there might have been enough nutrients and space and opportunity for the seed to do something, but it had a lot of competition and it was choked out. And then some seeds fell on good soil. Soil that had been cultivated, where there was water, the sunshine and the rain fell. So what could the seed do in soil like that? It could sprout, and then it could grow. It could flourish. It could continue to grow. And finally, what would happen? It would produce fruit. That's right. So those are the main characters in this little story that Jesus tells. And then he ended the story by saying, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear." So what does that imply? I mean, if you just take this little story at surface level, you think, okay, I really don't have much to think about here because I've got all that. Four kinds of soil, different results. But he said, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear." Everybody who was present heard the words of the story, but did everybody hear the story? What do you think? Yeah, they heard the words of the story, but there's a question as to whether they really heard the story, which I think is the reason he's telling the story, to get people to think about the way they're hearing the story. Some people hear, but they really don't hear. Have you ever talked to anybody like that? They hear, but they really don't hear. Anybody had children who have that issue? So, what are people thinking? If you put yourself in any way in this little story and scene that we've been talking about, give me some feedback. What are people thinking? I think if he has a big crowd of people, they're thinking a lot of different things. What are some of them? What kind of soil am I? That's a good question. What else?
What's he talking about?
Why is he telling us this? We already know it. Why is this great teacher telling little stories like that? What else? You think anybody is thinking, okay, here's a story. He says, hear it. What is the moral? What is the lesson? What is he wanting us to get out of it? What is the point? So what response am I supposed to make to it? So all those things are going on in the minds of his listeners. But then Jesus' disciples have access to him that other people don't have. And so they have a conversation with him. That ensues in verse 10. His disciples came to him and said, apparently a private conversation, "Why do you speak to them in parables?" So they were interested in, intrigued about the form of his teaching, the parabolic form. And he answered them, "To you it has been given to know the secrets of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. For to the one who has, more will be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. This is why I speak to them in parables, because seeing, they do not see. In hearing, they do not hear, nor do they understand. Indeed, in their case, the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled that says, 'You will indeed hear, but never understand. And you will indeed see, but never perceive. For this people's heart has grown dull, and with their ears they can barely hear, and their eyes they have closed, lest they should see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and understand with their heart, and turn, and I would heal them.' But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For truly I say to you, many prophets and righteous people longed to see what you see and did not see it, and to hear what you hear and did not hear it." So Jesus' disciples are startled by this new approach, and they ask him privately, "Why do you speak to them in parables?" So is this the first time anybody had ever heard a parable? Now, if you know something about the Old Testament, by one count, there are 7 parables that are included in the Old Testament. And these were Jewish men, so it was almost certainly not that they were unfamiliar with the parabolic form. It wasn't that that surprised them, but it was the shift in Jesus' approach. He had not been including these stories, and so they want to know why. And Jesus' answer, in effect, is that his change in approach resulted from the emerging attitudes from his listeners. You know, he was the master teacher. You can look at so many examples of this. He knew what to say and how to say it. He knew how to approach things. So he saw two attitudes emerging from his listeners, and he shifted his approach to adapt his teaching to coincide with what people were thinking. So he identified two groups. Who are they? He called them in a couple of different ways. He said, what was one group called? Okay, the haves and those who do not have. He also calls them you and them. To you it has been given to know the secrets of the kingdom, but to them it has not been given. That's how he names the groups first. And then, for to the one who has, more will be given, and he will have an abundance. For the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. So he identifies those who have and those who have not. And this brings us to the crux and the core of what we need to talk about tonight. Why Jesus spoke in parables. Why do some have and some have not? And what is it they have that others do not have? So let me illustrate this. That wasn't supposed to go back. So let me illustrate this. Do you remember Barney? Who remembers Barney? No. Barney, the big purple dinosaur. You remember Barney? Big purple dinosaur. So, who remembers Barney? Okay. So, Barney's not on TV anymore. Are you sad or happy about that? So, you could consider Barney kind of childish and just kind of dumb. Barney's show had some really good songs. One of the songs was "Please and Thank You Are the Magic Words." You remember that? One of the songs was "Good Manners Are Important for People All Around the World." No matter where you are, who you are, good manners are important. One of them was that it's important to wear seat belts. So he had songs that had an important message. But if you don't know Barney, or if you don't think much of Barney, if you think Barney is kind of dumb and childish, then those songs probably won't mean much to you. You won't remember them. You won't get their message. They won't do you much good, because you've decided something in your mind about Barney, that he is kind of childish, or he's from another time and place and not really relevant to anything that's going on today. So if you don't have a good view of Barney, then however nice the words are in the songs he sings, you don't get much out of it. Well, I think this doesn't exactly, but it closely approximate what's going on here. Jesus' point is that with a certain kind of heart, the parables would bring more light. People would see, even see secret things that they hadn't seen before. But with another kind of heart, with a proud and rebellious heart, their confusion would just increase. So, by parables, by this teaching method, Jesus brought light to some, and He brought darkness to others. Now let's think about that. If He brought light to some and darkness to others, does that mean His stories were different for different people? He told one story for these people and it was light. He told another story for this people and that was dark. Is that right? No, it tells the same story. Remember, the sower sows the seed and he sows the same seed. So the issue is not a different story for different groups. But it brings light to some and darkness and confusion to others. So what's going on here? Is this arbitrary predestination? You know, God decides the people who are light and the people who are darkness, and He decides the people who get it and the people who don't. Is that right? Yes. Yeah, I think you're exactly on the right track. Some people are teachable. So what's in the heart of a teachable person? What kind of heart do they have?
Receptive.
Open.
Humble.
A receptive person has a heart like that. They want to know, and when they know, they're willing to do. So what kind of heart does another person have who doesn't hear or appreciate? Hard?
Crowded?
Sinful?
Critical?
Okay. Proud?
Rebellious?
Do they come wanting to know? No, often they come thinking they already know. And so they're not willing to do. Now, is this second kind of person that we're talking about? They're the have-nots. They're the thems. Did they just emerge right here in the time of Jesus? Or had they been around for a while? They've always been around. Where does Jesus find them? In the prophet Isaiah. That's right. He understands that it was nothing new. It's just what Isaiah saw in his day. And Isaiah described it. They see, but they don't see. They hear, but they don't hear. Why? What's going on? What's preventing their seeing and hearing? Attitude. He says, lest that people's heart has grown dull, and with their ears they barely hear, and with their eyes they have closed, lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their heart and turn, and I would heal them. These are the have-nots. They won't know the mysteries of the kingdom because they don't want to. So Jesus says, I'm speaking to them in parables because they can't. He sees this group of people emerging from His listeners, and He says, I'm speaking to them in parables because they can't see. Could they have seen? Should they have seen? Yes, they could and should have, but they didn't. Did He want them to see? Where do you find that in His quotation from Isaiah? What is He willing to do? Right, He is willing to heal them. If they will turn, He will heal them. He wants them to see, but they are not seeing. They weren't seeing through the usual methods of teaching, so maybe these little stories would help them get the point. Jesus wanted to open their heart. So it was a masterful, I think it was a masterful approach, because the people who could see, these little stories would help them see even more and better. And the people who couldn't see, maybe, the story would stick in their minds. It would tease their thinking. And maybe sometime in the future, they would get an aha moment. It would all fall into place and they would see. So Jesus says the words of Isaiah are fulfilled here. You know, you can preach and preach and preach, and some people will not listen and be healed because they don't want it. There are some people God can't do anything with because they don't want Him to do anything with them. It's not a deficiency of God or the message, but it's a problem with the listeners. So, what do we have to think about? Well, when we hear the Word of God, we're either going to be better or worse. We're either going to be better or worse. We're either going to have more light or we're going to find ourselves in more darkness. Have you thought about this? The same sun that melts wax also hardens clay. The same sun that melts wax hardens clay. So the parables are out there. And they will not make a humble heart proud, but they can make a proud heart humble if the hearer wants them to do. And that's what the Savior wanted to happen. But that would be a choice that others had to make. Well, Jesus didn't typically do this, but He did it on this occasion, and that is He interpreted the parable. So, verse 18, hear the parable of the sower. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what has been sown in his heart. This is what was sown along the path. As for what was sown on rocky ground, this is the one who hears and immediately receives it with joy, yet there's no root. He endures for a while, and when tribulation or persecution arises on account of the word, immediately falls away. As for what was sown among souls, this is one who hears the word, but the cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful. As for what was sown on good soil, this is the one who hears and understands. He bears fruit and yields in one case 100-fold and another 60 and another 30. So what does that leave us to ask ourselves? What do you say? It leaves us to ask ourselves what kind of soil am I? What kind of soil am I? He says it's the parable of the sower, and he spreads the word of the kingdom. So what's going on in the heart and life of the person who's the soil beside the road? What's at work? What does he say? Okay, and yeah. Who's at work in his heart? He says the evil one comes and snatches away what has been sown in his heart. So how's he able to do that? How is Satan able to do that with anybody? Okay. Paul in Ephesians refers to the person who has the spirit that's now working in the sons of disobedience. So the spirit, the devil works in the people who are giving themselves to disobedience. He in 2 Corinthians 4, he says he blinds the minds of the unbelieving. So something is at work in this person's life that prevents the word from doing its work. Then there is the second type of soil on rocky places. What's going on in this person's life? What does he say? Okay. And then other things. He says tribulation or persecution arises on account of the word. So he receives it. Oh, this is great, this is what I want to do, but then this is kind of hard, or somebody ridicules him, or tribulations or persecutions come, and the word no longer does its work. the little sprout begins to wither. Then the next soil, what's happening? The soil that has thorns. What does he identify going on? Cares of the world? Deceitfulness of riches. If you put this parable is found in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Mark adds desire for other things, and Luke adds the pleasures for this life. So what's at work? Distractions. Other things that are maybe enjoyable, that are attractive, and the word is choked out. So, in each case, something gets in the way of the word, preventing it from doing its work. It may be snatched away before it has an opportunity. We allow the evil one to take over. The word sometimes stays just temporarily, joyously, but difficulties develop and it's overshadowed by other things. The word is choked out. But the good soul, what's going on in the heart and life of a person who is good soil? Excuse me? Okay. At the end. So what's going on to lead to that? Okay. He's made a commitment. He understands. It takes root. So when he understands, what happens next? He applies it. Okay. He understands and he applies it. So the sower is the same and the seed is the same, but the soils are different. So if you will, imagine for just a moment that you are the soil. In fact, isn't that what Jesus wants us to do? He wants to imagine that we are the soil. Are you hard packed? Is the soil just dirt, no cultivation, no time and attention spent on it? And the seed falls on it, what happens? Nothing. Nothing happens. It doesn't go in. It's too hard, too cold, and exposed. Are you just a thin layer of dirt over a lot of rock? Looks good, but doesn't take long to expose the fact that there's shallow. It's shallow there, and there's nothing of substance to make the seed grow. It can't go down and get roots and get nourishment. Are you the soil that's full of thorns? You have moisture and nutrients, but there are a lot of other things vying for attention in your life. A lot of distractions. A lot of stuff going on. And you hear the word and you think, oh, that's great, I need to do that. But nope, too many things get in the way. Or are you that rich, brown, loose, moist dirt that's full of nutrients? So if you're a seed, now picture yourself as a seed. Let's just say you're a green bean seed. Where would you want to find yourself if you were a seed? You want to be thrown there on the side of the road? You want to be thrown where it's shallow? You want to be thrown where there are a lot of thorns? No, you want to be thrown where there's nutrients and moisture and depth. And so, what's the point? What do we take home with us? What's Jesus want us to take home with us? He says, if you have ears to hear, hear it. If you, as the seed, want soil like that, then what's the lesson to learn? I need to do whatever it takes to be soil like that. So I'm going to end this evening by telling you about my grandfather Lloyd. He's my mother's father. He had a property that was long and narrow, and in the back of it, he wanted to have a garden. It was absolutely the worst soil that you can imagine. It was like clay. It was full of rocks. But he wanted to have a garden there. It was the only property he had. So I was about 12 or 13 years old, and he bought a tiller. And so since he was older and I was younger, and I got to do the tilling. So we tilled it first. And I mean, I took the tiller back there, and it was one with the front tines, you know, and you just go like this, and you just, by the time you finish, you're just all shook up completely. And, but he wanted it to work. So every table scrap he had, he took it down there and put it on that. And he brought in bags of manure, and he brought in bales of peat moss, and he brought in some topsoil, and he did that over 2 or 3 years. And each year I would till that ground, and it got a little easier as time passed by. And you know, in about the fourth year, he planted a garden, and we had nice tomatoes and squash and okra because he took bad soil and made it good. That wasn't easy. That wasn't easy. It took a lot of time, energy, effort, and money, but it was possible. It happened. And it can happen in us, too. If we find ourselves to be bad soil, we're not destined to stay there. We can take some steps to do some things that will improve the soil so that when the Word of God comes in us, we understand and listen. Because we want to know so we can tell me. We want to know so we can do. So we can do God's Word. We want to know so we can do God's Word. Thanks for your time tonight. I enjoyed studying with you. Are you leading?
Yes, sir.
Do y'all know the number 2 in the supplement?
Yes. Well, we just got the supplements, but everyone can do it.
All right. Good. Thank you. Thank you.
The song before the invitation is going to be number 19. Number 19 in the supplement. Prepare me to be sanctuary, pure and holy, tried and true, with thanksgiving, I'll be a living sanctuary for you. Lord, teach your children to stop the fighting, start uniting.